Well, in the next few weeks, I'm going to be teaching a lot of things about ancient civilization and the origin of the races. It's very interesting to me. When I went to college, I went to Cal State and Bakersfield College and to the seminary. Seminary is where I got my best training. I had some really good teachers. Dr. Martin Canavan was my Western Civilization, Political Science, and Economics teacher there in the seminary. And he died on me, and I had to take his classes because they said I was the most qualified to do it. Because I also had Western Civilization, Political Science, and everything at Cal State and Bakersfield College. So they said, you're it. So I got to do that, and it was very hard. My students were grading me. I said, you have to give me a grade now at the end of this, because I said, I'm not teaching this class without getting credit for it, because I hadn't taken it. You want to learn something? Teach it. Mm-hmm. Brother Abe, you want to learn something? Teach it. Then it's when you're really going to learn. Now, we've got a lot of resource books here. this morning and last week, I quoted from G.H. Pember, Earth's Earliest Ages. This guy was a genius. He was like Bullinger, except straighter. Bullinger went off on tangents sometimes. G.H. Pember was a tremendous mind, and he knew the languages. All of these people that were brilliant knew the languages. Here's another one by Alfred Thomas Ede, the expanded panorama of the Bible. Here is another one called The Work of Christ Consummated in Seven Dispensations by Dr. J.R. Graves, which was this is the one that really preached that great message among Southern Baptist Convention back in the 1800s, remove not the ancient landmarks, that called the Southern Baptist back to task. Anyway, I will probably be using this, referencing this. The greatest book from that period, from that era, was The Doorway Papers by Arthur C. Custance, Noah's Three Sons. A Human History in Three Dimensions. A Human History in Three Dimensions. And then since that period of time, the leading archaeologist in America from the Smithsonian Institute really hampered and put a damper on a lot of research of the Americas. They did not want to say that America was a first-class example of genocide and ethnic cleansing and all the terrible things that happened in America. They suppressed information, all types of archaeology that was up. Even Thomas Jefferson said, you know, there were Indians here in this country. Lots of Indians in this country before 1492. Now, there's this book here called 1491. This is a very good book. It is by Charles C. Mann. You want something that will just really intrigue you. And then here's another one called 1493 by Charles C. Mann. This tells you the history of the Americas. And the history of the Americas, now this guy, he brings things out. It'll have man 50,000 years old, a lot of different things in here that I don't exactly agree with. I don't exactly agree with some of the so-called philosophical lame brains and theological circles that say the earth is only 6,000 years old. I don't believe that. That's not what the Bible teaches. Now this goes way, way back. You know, we know the earth was created perfect. It wasn't created a chaos. And that came from the Babylonian idea of creation. You will get that from here. You'll get that from J. Lewis Guthrie. You'll get it from G.H. Pember. He'll tell you the Babylonian idea of creation, where everything was created in chaos and then God brought it from chaos to order. Everything is created in order. Everything from God is perfect and created in order to begin with. It becomes disorder. That's what we call degeneration. Degeneration of the whole cosmos. So we're going to be looking at some of these things as we study from here when we talk about the origins of the races. And I'm going to try to give you something like I taught 35 years ago. And I even taught this Brother Roger, you weren't here when I taught this before, were you? I don't think anybody, were you here not in the early period of time when we discussed, when we studied this? This was about 4 years ago when I was teaching Genesis the last time. I taught the origin of the races. I guess all those people are gone. Someplace else, probably out to missions or whatever. Now let's start in 9 and verse 28. So we're going to go chase those rabbits in just a while. Waichi, Noah, Ahara, Hamabul, Shiloshi, Miot, Shana, Waichi Amishim, Shana. And became and existed. Noah, after the flood, the deluge, 350 years. 350 years. Now, Brother Stephen, how long is this 350 years in our modern time? How long was this? How many years is this today?
Minus 5 days, a year.
How many years is this today, Christine?
350.
That's right. That's the answer I want. 350 years. 350 years. All right. This is 350 years today. This isn't 350 years and one day is 1,000 years and one day is 30 minutes. We're talking about 350 years. These guys really lived. What was the oldest man in the Bible?
Methuselah.
What does Methuselah mean? Methuselah. Young lady. When he's dead, it shall come to pass. Man of the dark. Man born to die. He was born to die because he was a prediction. Who was Methuselah's father?
Enoch.
And Enoch, what was his occupation?
Prophet.
A prophet of God. And he prophesied through his son, when he dies, it shall come to pass the flood, the judgment of God to come. He preached for 300 years that the flood was coming. Read it. I challenge you, read the book of Enoch this week. Then come back there with this next week. Read the book of Enoch. Read it. He'll tell you great detail. Read the book of Jasher, Hosefer Yashur. Read the book of Jasher. That's an old history book. It is not inspired, but it is a history book. That one I can tell you. Okay? So Noah lived 350 years after the flood. We got that down? That's 350 years. It's not 100 years and not 75 years. It's not 35 months either. Not 350 months. 350 years. Now let's go to 929. Why ye you, Kol, Yemei, Noah, Tisha, Miot, Shana, Why Cha Mishim, Shana, Why Yemit. Now that word there, Why Yemit, that word you're going to see a lot. And became, and existing, and they existed all the days of Noah, 950 years. Why Yemot? He died and he stayed dead. That is third person, master, senior, Calwell, consecutive, and perfect. He died and stayed dead. In the Greek, it's apathonein. Now let's go to 10 and verse 1. Wi'ele to yedoth b'nei Noah Shem Cham Y'afet. Why Yehwalidu. Lehem. Banim. Acher. Hamabul. Wele. And these. Toledoth. Toledoth. This Toledoth here, that is, that means generations, family histories, genealogy. Of the sons of Noah. The sons of Noah. Benay means what? Remember that, Christine? Benay? Sharon? Benay. According to a pattern. We have children according to a pattern. You have children that look like you, don't you? Mm-hmm. According to a pattern. Benay Noah. What does Noah mean? What does Noah mean, Brother Abe? You remember what Noah mean?
Peace.
Peace, safety. The first 10 names in the Bible tell the whole story of soteriology, the whole story of the salvation, the study of salvation of mankind. Noah is the 10th man. Go all the way back to Adam. Adam. Adam means what? Earth. Earthy. The first Adam gives us what? According to the New Testament. Death. The second Adam comes down from heaven and gives us life. He's a life-giving one. We have Zeth. Zeth. What does Zeth mean?
Replacement.
For replacement, Zeth. Replacement. Our substitute. The first Adam was our death sentence. The second Adam was our life. And he is our substitute for our payment of sin. You go all the way down. Mahalel, the splendor of God. Enoch, he was our teacher. All of these. Lamech, King of Kings and Lord of Lords. All the way. It tells the whole story of salvation and the coming, the first coming and the second coming of Christ. And if you're in Christ, you're safe. If you're not in Christ, you're not safe. You're going to have the flood. Damnation, the judgment is going to come upon you. All right? And these are generations of the sons, those according to the pattern. Shem means what?
Monument.
Name, monument, pillar. Hum.
Dark one.
Hot, burning, desire. And Yefath. Yefath. Yefath means what?
To spread out.
Now, I didn't watch the Three Stooges very much, but one of them guys used to hit the others like that and say, spread out all the time. Spread out. I can't remember whether it was Moe or who it was, but he'd say, spread out. Anyway, Japheth is spreading ones. And there were born and kept on being born, begotten to them sons, children, sons and daughters, banim, after the flood. Nations have personalities. Now I'm going to go and we're going to start looking at some of these nations, right? From 10 and verse 2 on tells us the table of nations. Now, I'm going to use these three books basically as my textbook here. The Bible tells you a lot about it, but the Bible doesn't tell you everything. The Bible tells you all the basic facts that we have, but the Bible sometimes just states a fact and that's that. You can study history. You can study the book of Jasher. The book of Jasher will tell you what Noah's wife's name was and where she came from and how old she was when he married her. Have you read that one, Brother Dave? No. Have you read any of these? You read that, some of that. All right. You can learn a lot from these extra biblical sources. All right. I'm not telling you to just trust everything that's in them. The book of Jasher is not inspired. If he tells you something that's contrary to revealed biblical truth, then throw it over your shoulder, throw it over the shoulder, whatever. But when it can help you in understanding what's going on, good. The Bible doesn't tell us about the Canaanite Wars, But the book of Jasher tells you about it a lot. The book of the Bible tells you there were Canaanite wars and didn't tell you anything else. The book of Jasher tells you how strong Jacob's sons were, and even how, even over 100 years old, how strong Jacob was as a warrior. When Jacob went down into Egypt and took his sons down there for hundreds of years, they were still afraid of those powerful sons. Those boys fought. Who was the Pharaoh in Joseph's time? Who went to war to defend Egypt? Joseph went to war in his chariot. And he took his brothers with him, and they devastated every nation that stood against Egypt. They devastated every one of them. There were about 100,000 people that Jacob's sons killed in the land of Canaan. They almost depopulated the land of Canaan before they went down into Egypt. And the book of Jasher tells you all of those cities and how they did. And the tremendous feats. Jacob was a tremendous archer. He could shoot a bow and arrow. Jacob was no sissy. I've heard so many people talk about Jacob as being a sissy. He's a mama's boy. Have you heard that story? That's hogwash. Esau was a playboy. Jacob was the breadwinner of the family, and he was strong. That was a strong man. He was a big man, a strong man, and a powerful man. But he didn't want to kill his brother. But his brother wanted to kill him, didn't he? Jacob always tried to do the right thing. Did you know that? You go study it. I've heard preachers preach, old Jacob was a jerk, and he did this, and he did that. Ah, oh, boy, I mean, he was a terrible guy, and all this kind of stuff. You go study his life, and you see what kind of a man he was. How many wives did he want? One. How many was forced upon him? Four. Those wives fought over him all his life. He only loved one woman. Who was that? Rachel. That's the woman he loved. He loved Rachel. That's the only one. He didn't want any other woman. But did God permit all of this to happen to him? Absolutely. And how did Jacob handle it? Well, that's all I can say. He handled it well. His boys deceiving him and all of that. Yeah. And they say all it was because Jacob deceived his father. Who deceived his father?
Mama.
Daddy would not do the right thing. So God had to use a woman. Because Daddy wouldn't do the right thing. Isaac wanted to give his inheritance to the playboy. What we call the full-time RVer. That's what he was. He didn't do anything. Jacob made the living. And when Jacob left, he went over there. And guess what he did over there in Haran? He was a hard worker. When he went over there to a well, now this is jumping ahead of time a little bit, but when he went over there to that well that had that gigantic stone on it that took three or four men to move, who moved it? Jacob did himself. That was a strong man. In the book of Jasher, it tells you how strong he was. So many people get ideas and read other preachers' work, and then they just go on and do all kinds of weird stuff with old Jacob. Now let's go here. Look at the table of the nations a little bit. A table of nations. What? Yeah, I gave that to you before. Yeah, you have it. I'm going to read it to you a little bit from here as I taught it in the seminary 35 years ago. Yes, young lady. I don't know. I can get some for you later anyway, okay. I think. I don't see any more here at this moment. I'll try to get them to you for next week. Okay? Now, I'm going to read to you from this book. I'm going to just tell you just a little bit. We're going to talk about the sons of Shem now. You can be surprised who Shem's sons are. Shem's sons are Elam, Ashur, Arphaxad, Lud, and Aram. The nations that sprang from him were Persians, Assyrians, Chaldeans, Hebrews, Lydians, Armenians, and Syrians. They settled in Assyria,
They settled in Syria. They settled in Persia. They settled in northern Arabia and in Mesopotamia. And some crossed up with these, settled in the east. The Shemites and the Hamites crossed. Some of these went to foreign and found China. Now, Ham's sons, basically all these are the Orientals also. Ham's sons were Cush, Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim is what? That's Hebrew for what? Mitzrayim. Egypt. Egyptos. We get our word Egyptos from what language? Greek, not from Hebrew. Phut, Canaan. They are the Ethiopians, they are the Egyptians, they are the Libyans, they are the Canaanites. That's who Ham's sons were. Canaan, remember? Canaanites. These are the ones that settled the land of Canaan, which means flat and low land. And we have the continent of Africa and Arabia. We have North American Indians and the South American Indians, Mesoamerican Indians, and we have China from this group. And in J.R. Graves' book, page 195 through 198, we can go there and study this also. But I think it's more relevant if we study from Noah's three sons, and then I will tell you what I read from those two books and that book over there. Try to do that from memory, okay? Japheth, yes.
Have they confirmed all this with DNA? Because I know you can do
the DNA, you search it, you'll see it.
Okay.
I should have brought my DNA chart with me. I'd show you. I'm almost all Indian, American Indian. I'm very little. According to my birth, I am 1/32 Scots, which is the only white blood I have. I'm 1/32.
That's a roughneck, right?
And Scots people are pretty crazy. You know, the English and Scots, they were cannibals. You know, they were cannibals. I'm a little bit Italiano, and a little bit French from the Lambert side of my family. I mean, very little. We're talking about a 32nd or 64th of those. The rest of it's Indian. Japheth's sons is Gomer, Magog, Madai, Javan, Tubal, Meshech, Tiras. The Russians and the Germans, the Scythians, the Medes, the Ionians, the Athenians, the Greeks, the Iberians, the Muscovites, and the Thracians. And here we also have a mixture of Japheth, and Shem's sons are in Turkey. Asia Minor, Armenia, the Caucasus in Europe, and Russia. These are the Black Sea area. Turkey, all of this. Now let's go on to Arthur Cussons. There are 10 volumes of this, by the way. 10 volumes of Arthur Cussons' books. I have all 10 of them, and I've read them. This was in from my God's Eternal Purpose class. I had about 150 textbooks that I read in that class alone. My teacher was Dr. Carl E. Farah, and he was a book junkie. And if I didn't buy it, he'd give it to me. And in the front of a lot of my books, we'll have, I don't know whether these or not. He gave me so many books, or gave so many books to me, that I can't remember. Neither one of these. But most of these books on God's eternal purpose and all of the studies that we had to do with that, I'm telling you what. And we had to write a paper every week. Every week. I didn't ask you that. I just asked you questions, that's all. On we're going to talk about the settling of the world. The settling of the world. The populating of the world. What was the greatest nation in the Middle East world, in North Africa?
Egypt.
What was it?
Pharaoh.
What's a nationality? Nations have personalities. Okay? Nations have personalities, and those personalities spread. They were the greatest minds of the day mathematically. What is the oldest monument left in the world today that was pre-Diluvian, before Noah? The Sphinx. The Sphinx is the oldest monument. And maybe the Great Pyramid of Giza, you know, that great big pyramid. Perfection. They couldn't do any better than that today, could they, Roger? If you had to build a pyramid that big, they couldn't do it any better today with the modern technology that we have today. They weren't dummies. Man has not increased in knowledge. If it wasn't for libraries, we'd be village idiots. We would. We'd have to start all over every time, you know. Like a little goose. Start all over. No libraries. No what we call accumulation of knowledge. Back then, how did they learn these advanced sciences? Back to this morning, young lady. How did they learn it?
Through angels and
demons. Angels and demonic beings. And this is what we call sometimes forbidden sciences. Forbidden sciences. We're going to go into that next Sunday a little bit further. We're going to go just a little bit, expand a little bit further into that. Talked about the demons and angels and spirits and fallen angels and all of that. The greatness of Egypt was more monumental. The Sumerians did not build with stone, for they did not have it in sufficient quantity, but they left another kind of monument, imperishable written records. Once these began to be deciphered, something of their achievements became apparent. It is by such means that we know, for example, their mathematics. Dr. T.J. Meek has told us, like the Egyptians, the early Sumerians used the additive method to multiply and divide. But before 2000 B.C., they had evolved a multiplication tables and tables of reciprocals and of squares and cubes and other powers of a square and cube roots and the like. We know that in America, in South America and Mesoamerica, they were making wheels. They didn't use them because wheels would have got them in trouble, because that's very high, steep, mountainous area. So wheels, they only put wheels on toys. In real life, wheels didn't do them one bit of good. Llamas did. And a llama is a what family? Camel family. We have that down there. We have the greatest medicine. We have the greatest sciences. We have brain surgery. We have anesthetics. We have medicines. We have pharmaceuticals in America that greatly advances anything that was known in the world. We have genetic engineering in foods. Beans.
Corn.
Tomatoes. Peppers. Potatoes. All of this was genetically engineered here. Europe was starving to death with what? Barley and wheat. That's it. Here they were. Europe was starving to death when Columbus came here. And when Columbus came here and took the stuff back there, that was called the Columbian Exchange. Okay? It's called the Columbian Exchange in your history books. They had attained a complete mystery of fractional quantities and had developed a very exact terminology of mathematics, the correct value of pi, and the correct geometric formula for calculating the area of rectangles were known before 3000 B.C. That's 5,000 years ago, people. This was all known then. This guy did not have that book, those two books, in his hand when this book was written. What's given there, we know now that it was here also. And everything to do with the Egyptians also equates with what? You take the globe and take it apart. In the days of Peleg, what? God divided the earth. Right now we have Noah over here. We're talking about Noah, and we're talking about the reestablishment of government here, and now we're going to have the seed work of all the nations through here, and then we're going to have the nations becoming very wicked, and so God confuses the languages, and God divides the earth to keep mankind from killing himself before time, before he should. in the last days during the tribulation period way over here, we have a force coming through here with the Antichrist that's going to kill 5 out of every 6 people in the world and 2 out of every 3 Jews in the world, and the world is going to be depopulated. Now, the rapture, I believe, is going to come before that, and so a lot of live people are going to be raptured up to heaven, and they're off the earth. But there's going to be a lot of war during this period of time. And then for 1,000 years, we're going to see the earth repopulated again. God has had to bring judgment on the earth to keep man from killing everybody. Why did God send the flood to begin with? There was a contamination of what?
Angels and humans.
There was a contamination of the gene pool. A contamination of the gene pool. The gene pool, the Messiah may not have been born from a pure human if he hadn't done that. Now, there were Nephilim before the flood and there were Nephilim after the flood. Why did the Lord tell Caleb and Joshua to go in there and kill all of certain people? Kill man, woman, child, all their pets and all their animals. Because the gene pools were contaminated in those areas, and there was tremendous diseases in those areas. We know that now, even from that. Let's go on here. In the years that followed came the knowledge of how to find the area of rectangles, circles, irregular quadrangles, polygons, truncated pyramids. How old is the Sphinx? It goes before that. That goes back before Noah, or at least in Noah's time. Noah lived how many years? 950 years. So that's almost 1,000 years. That's almost a millennium. Are you learning anything here, Schrader? All right. All right. Is this part of his homework?
Yeah, that's Deacon.
Oh, the Deacon. I'm sorry about that, Deacon. Boy, I really goofed there, didn't I? Sorry about that twice tonight. I called you the wrong name. That's what you get for getting a haircut. Also, cones and the like. By 2000 BC, the theorem attributed to Pythagoras was familiar, and they could solve problems involving quotations with 2 or 3 or 4 unknowns. This is advanced algebra and geometry, isn't it? According to one of the best authorities in this area, they had developed an equivalent to our logarithm tables. George Sarton, writing some 20 years later than Meek, could add to this accomplishment their knowledge that the angle in a semicircle is a right angle. Now, this is something maybe this bore you to death, but they did this long time ago. And they could measure the volume of a rectangular parallelepiped or in a circular cylinder or the frustum of a cone and a square pyramid. He has summed up this achievement thus. The Sumerians and the Babylonians' successors left 3 legacies, the importance of which cannot be exaggerated. The position, concept in numeration, that is imperfect because of the absence of the zero. But guess what happened in South America? They invented a zero. Now let's take the continent of the world, Pangea. Pangea means what? Remember what that means, Deacon? Pangea. 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 That's 2 Greek words.
Pan is
all.
Oh, all.
And gea comes from gay.
All
earth.
Around.
All earth. In other words, the earth now, at this period of time, we have dirt, earth, and we have water. Now, I wish I had a globe tonight because I was going to bring one, but I did not. And you look and see, and you see how the earth was torn apart by terrible, violent earthquakes. And we have the shifting of the tectonic plates. What are the tectonic plates?
The continents.
The tectonic plates are the crust of the earth. There's the Pacific, the Atlantic, there's all different kinds of plates, Mediterranean, all of this. The earth. And the earth is actually a molten ball of very hot material. It's molten. It's liquid in the middle. On the earth, the crust of the earth is like an eggshell. And this eggshell has cracks in it. And where these what we call tectonic plates shift, that's what we have earthquakes, seismic activity. Now the earth is going to be torn apart at this period of time as one piece. But I want you to see that the personalities of the nations, the personalities of the nations, what kind of personality did the Egyptians have? What did they do for a living?
Think.
Huh? What did they do, Brother Roger?
Well, a lot of war.
They did a lot of war, but what did they build?
The pyramids.
And great monuments to individuals and to gods. And these are all pagan gods, by the way. These aren't their true God of heaven. Some people say that the Great Pyramid and the Sphinx was actually what we call theocentered. In other words, the Great Pyramid had secrets in it that brought forth and told about the whole story of salvation. And the Sphinx did. It had the head of the head of a woman and the body of a lion. And we have Virgo and we have Leo. That's the beginning and the end of the signs of the zodiac, or what do you want to call it? The beginning and end. The beginning and the end. That told the beginning of man time when the virgin would bring forth a child and that he would come in like a lion and rule the world, the lion of the tribe of Judah. Some people believe that. Now, there's not a whole lot of evidence about that, but it's possible. I'm just throwing that out there for you, just to make you think. It's a good trick if you can do it. Number two, the extension of the numerical scale to sub-multiples of the unit as well as to the multiples. This was lost and was not revived until AD 1585. Remember what I told you about libraries? We'd be idiots if we didn't have libraries. And a nation is always judged by its roads, its postal service, and its libraries from ancient times. Just think about that for a minute. Its roads, its postal service, which is communication, and its libraries, which is knowledge. Where do we stand today? The golden dot, all libraries. Postal service you can't trust at all, and the roads are in terrible shape. No infrastructure. This is what we call infrastructure. AD 1585, with reference to the decimal numbers and the use of the same base for the numbers and meteorology, this too was lost and not revived till the foundations of the metric system in 1795. Do you see how much information was lost and then recovered? You know why? Because of the Rosetta Stone, because they could read the old things. When that book over there was written, the Egyptian could not be deciphered until when? They found the Rosetta Stone, and then they could read ancient Egyptian. What was Joseph Smith's big propaganda machine? That he wrote in Reformed Egyptian. That's what he wrote the Book of Mormon in. And that's what the plates had them on, Reformed Egyptian. But now we can read Egyptian. Where are those plates? So we can read them now. They're not anywhere to be found. All right, because that's a false religion. The devil's always busy. Algebra, cartography, and chemistry was known back then. There are two main metals that are malleable. What are the two malleable metals?
Copper and brass.
Gold and silver. Gold and silver. Gold and silver are malleable. Gold and silver. Now, what do we mean by malleable? You can shape it without melting it. Shape it without melting it. You don't have to forge it. You can shape it without melting it. When we can understand things a whole lot better. What was that calf made out of, that Aaron, which was a goldsmith, what was that calf made out of? Made out of wood. It made out of wood. And it was gold plated. Hammered gold all over it. So it looked like gold, but it was wooden. And what did Moses do with that golden calf?
Threw it in fire.
He threw it in fire and burned it and took the ashes and made him drink it. Okay? They got their teeth filled with gold. The Greeks inherited a sexagesimal system from the Sumerians, but mixed it up with the decimal system, using the former only for submultiples of the unit and later multiples. Thus, they spoiled with systems and started with disgraceful conclusion of what we still we are still the victims of. They abandoned the principle of a position which had to be reintroduced from India 1,000 years later. These are great civilizations. Now, I want you to understand, what does ham mean? Dark, worthy. These people. Now, of the Hamite languages, after the confusion and the division of the earth there, what languages were more confused than any other languages? The Hamite languages were more, there was more diverse Hamite languages than there were any. In European, there's only a few language roots. That's why everybody can speak everybody's language in Europe, because they're all alike. I mean, the languages have the same root. Okay? The Hamite languages are tremendously diverse. Chinese. Well, they've gone already, but see, he's Oriental. All of those Orientals have different dialects from the area. One guy can't read the other guy's language. They even have different alphabets sometimes. You ought to hear the story of the Japanese when they ran them off to the island over there to get rid of them because they didn't like them. That king went over there and he... And of course, we have all these cultures that are diverse and they all have personalities. But what is the personality of the Hamite Egyptian culture? What personality does that carry with it? The Anglo-Saxon in early America deployed that principle.
Domination?
In America. Huh?
Domination?
They dominated, all right. It's called slavery.
Oh,
well, that's right. All Egypt lived on slave labor. South America lived on slave labor. Mesoamerica lived on slave labor. North American Indians were a democratic body. Original democracy. Like was in that was in Greek society. You see those two societies very close together in thought and philosophy. We have great monuments built in South America and Mesoamerica. Great monuments built by slave labor with a deity in the center of it. A goal. And almost all of them have a deified leader or chieftain or pharaoh, so to speak. Where are the oldest mummies found in the world? Where are the oldest mummies?
My wife says in my house.
Maya?
Huh?
In the Mayans?
Yes, down in South America. That is where the oldest mummies in the world are. Not in Egypt. And South Americans are making mummies. And the Egyptians have mummies. Do nations have personalities? Do nations have personalities? Yeah. Do you see that? Slave labor? Chinese. Why do the Chinese people, the dynasties, the Ming dynasty, I can't remember all those dynasties. Brother Abe could tell us about a lot of those dynasties. But all those dynasties existed on what, Brother Roger?
Slavery.
The largest fleet of ships that was ever been put on the ocean until America was what?
Chinese.
They had over 300 May gigantic ships, the Pinta, Nanita, and the Santa Maria, you could put them in the hold of these ships and lose them. You'd have to look for them. These were big ships. They had bilge pumps. They had waterproof nails. Rust-proof nails. All of this they had before 1400. China looked at Europe as nothing there that they wanted. Nothing there that they wanted. These people are filthy, stinking savages. That's what they said about the Europeans. Filthy, stinking savages. They have no culture. They smell.
They still say it.
the filthy streets. When they came to South America and they saw in the Mesoamerica and they saw the giant cities there. By the way, almost all Indians lived in a socialist society. So everybody had food. There was no starving. When Fernando, I can't remember his name now. When he went down into South America, he went into the city there and he saw streets that were clean. And in streets, the streets in Europe and Spain were cesspools.
That's Cortez.
Cortez?
Yeah.
Well, I think he was in Mexico. Anyway, when they saw those streets, they couldn't believe it. He said, there's no skinny, starving people. There's nothing. What's going on here? I never seen anything like this before. The streets are beautiful. The largest cities, heavily populated. Heavy populations. The most populated place in the world was the Americas before 1491. Let's go on and look at a little bit more about these personalities of these nations. We got mathematics. And among the Sumerians and the Babylonians, banking houses sprung up. You know, before Christ in China, that they had printed money. And you could sell everything you wanted to sell, and you could sell it for a certain price. And then you could take that, turn it into printed money, and you could go into a total different profits 1,000 miles away, and you could buy everything you just sold for the same price. There was price control. Are you learning something here? Deacon, you got something out of this? All right. These nations have personalities. They printed money. In Europe, they were printing money, but they used precious metals. In China, they were using money that was backed by the Federal Reserve, so to speak, by the king. And you could go from one province to the other, and you could trade. You could sell your house, you could sell your cows, you could sell your wife. And your children, and go over there and buy another wife and buy another child and buy another house and buy another cow for exactly the same money that you sold the other one. Now, I'm saying that funny, but that's reality. That's what they did so many times. Banking houses sprung up, became the forerunners of the world economics. As remember what I talked about, I used to teach about Western civilization, economics, and political science. You can't study any of these without studying the other. You can't study any of these Western civilization without studying politics and without studying economics, because all of it is tied together. And became the forerunners of the world economics as represented by our international banking institutions. Do you know that they had a stock market? They didn't start with America and Wall Street. There were stock markets 600,000-700,000 years ago. Two such banks were known from the cuneiform records by the names of Enigbe and Sons, and established in 1000 B.C. Like Bank of America, you know, whatever. Wells Fargo. And lasting some 500 years, the Morashi Sons, founded in 1464 B.C. and dissolved finally in 405 B.C. The later established a system of mortgaging. Glass was known to the Sumerians 2700 B.C. Both they and the Egyptians were experts in the working of glass. Glass was a very important factor. The pyramids. We see the pyramids. The pyramids were made out of stone, weren't they? Deacon, what did they cover those pyramids with? Do you know? After they were finished? Anybody in this classroom know what they covered them with? Alabaster, glass like stone, polished. And when the sun hit them, it was like brilliance. When Napoleon went into Egypt, they started shooting the nose off the Sphinx and going up there and taking all of that alabaster off of those great pyramids and taking it into Europe and making all kinds of stuff with it. They moved a lot of monuments from Egypt and took them into Europe. For material coated with emery or corundum, they made diamond drills. to drill. They made all types of jewelry with gold and silver. Some of the finest plated jewelry, the thinnest plated jewelry in the world was found in South America from gold and silver. Who were the goldsmiths in Egypt? Aaron and his sons. All right, Aaron and his sons. A tablet found a few years ago was inscribed by a certain doctor, Lugal Adina, dated 2300 B.C. This is a doctor of medicine. And in it, we are told how surgeons of the day had already learned to set broken bones. What did they do in the Civil War in America when somebody got shot and got his leg broke, Brother Roger?
Amputation.
Cut the leg off. Stone Age medicine. These guys were doing this 2300 B.C. 2300 B.C. You know that the Greek idea of medicine, what we call the oath of Hippocrates, actually retarded the whole world of science and medicine with their idea of medicine. That it, when George Washington was dying of pneumonia, they keep bleeding him to death and taking his strength away instead of calling in some Cherokee medicine man and saving his life because they knew more. Sicknesses are given names and the symptoms carefully noted in these ancient records. Waldo H. Duberstein of the Oriental Institute of University of Chicago, in reporting on this, has written, 100 years of exploration and research in the field of ancient Near Eastern history have yielded such astounding results that today it is unwise to speculate on the further capacities and resources of these early people along in any line of human endeavor. They are learning so much about the past. There was a man one time says, a man that won't study history is a fool and bound to repeat it. If you don't have libraries, you start off over again like a goose in a new world every day. Medicine was carefully regulated profession with legally established fees for various operations and very stiff penalties for failure and carelessness, evidently intended to protect the customer and prevent charlatanism. This certainly suggests that the profession was not simply a school of magicians. Now, who are these people? These are all Hamites. All Hamites. The Hamites spread further in civilization than any other people, and they founded the greatest nations that were ever known to mankind in ancient worlds. Are you about ready to quit? Let's go on a little. Do you want to go a little further? You ready to quit? A little further? Okay. Although their buildings have been largely disappeared, they were noteworthy examples of the use of local materials, mud, dried brick, reeds. The former are easily visualized by promising materials. The latter are not. But as a matter of fact, reed huts mentioned in some of the very early established are capable of surprising beauty and spaciousness. What kind of mud huts did they use in the Middle East? And what did they tile them with? How many of you ever been in Mexico? How many of you gone to Spain?
The terracotta.
Yeah. The terracotta rules that the tile roofs, they would take a slave and put it on his leg, and the leg is larger up here and smaller down here, and they would use those things, and that's how they would build them. And they're tapered to the leg. They use them on their leg, them right out of clay. The mud buildings with the what we call the Spanish swirl and these white buildings and everything, this did not come from Mexico originally. Where did it come from? It came from Spain. And where did it come from Spain? Did Spain originate it? No. The Ottoman Empire, which goes back to the Middle East, which goes back to much of the Hamite races. Okay. That's where we go. By the time the Sumerians arrived in Mesopotamia, what does Mesopotamia mean?
Land between two rivers.
The land between the rivers. What rivers?
Euphrates.
The Tigris and the Euphrates. This is what we call the Fertile Crescent. They had domesticated as many animals as were ever domesticated in that area, with the exception of the horse, which was tamed by the Hittites. The Hittites. Who are these Hittites? These Hittites are the one that became the Chinese. Chinese liked horses a lot. And by the way, now a lot of people don't say this, but there were horses in America. And the Indians were riding horses and breeding horses. Appaloosa is one that's left from that period of time, which they don't want to say that. I mean, there's been so much suppression of knowledge, and what the real history of America is ridiculous. I mean, people with a preconceived idea, and they try to make everything fit into that preconceived idea. That's it. Although they did have a draft animal, a mountain ass, and that same may be said of the grains in always considered the highland zone in the north and east whence they had come, was this reason they most likely home with few exceptions of all domesticated plants and animal species. See, they were domesticating plants over there. What did they do in South America and North America? This was the greatest plant engineering, DNA engineering in the world right here. Do nations have personalities? Do you understand what I'm talking about? How about if you go over there to the Aborigines of Australia? What do they practice? The same things as a North American Indian. They are all medicine men. They have deities. But they all live off the land and don't use it up. That's what the Aborigines do, and that's what the North American Indian did. These are different cultures. Why? Because nations have personalities and are related to each other. Related to each other. If you look at my DNA, you're going to find Genghis Khan, because I'm Indian. And you're going to find the Aborigines. You're going to see the Hamite blood. And if you chase it all the way back, it goes back to the Fertile Crescent and back to the Hamites. I got a little bit of everything in there because you know what? Abraham had three wives. One was a Hamite. One was a Japhethite. And one's a Shemite. There was Sarah the Shemite. The Hamite was Hagar, which meant what? Wanderer. And then the Japhethite?
Keturah.
Which, by the way, Keturah is the mother of many of the Arab nations, by the way. It's not Ishmael. Keturah. These species are commonly known today and are called the source of species of the plant animal or the plant world. Written records appear at the very earliest levels, and even at Sa'alak, there seem to have been no period when they were without use of metals. We talk about the Stone Age, and we talk about the Iron Age. We talk about the Bronze Age. We talk about all of this. The Hamites were the ones that worked with metal. The Hittites that are closely related to the Chinese. Those Hittites were the ones that started forging metal. They're the blacksmiths of the day. They're the ones that could make plowshare. You know, Israel went into the land, and they didn't even know how to make a plowshare, did they? Had to go to the Hittites to get them to sharpen their plowshares or to sharpen their swords or whatever. Here again, there is no true beginning. The Egyptians, like the Sumerians and the founders of the Tel Halif in northern Syria, appear to have been culturally creative from the very beginning and to have developed their technology exceedingly rapidly. Pastoral societies are slower to develop, and the Semites, who were largely pastoral, contributed little and borrowed a lot. They did nothing. They contributed little. What did the Shemites contribute?
God gave them their land.
God gave them that land. God gave them money.
Yeah.
God gave them the land. They were monuments, remember. That's where God would make himself known through that. Semites, who were largely pastoral, contributed little and borrowed much. The Indo-Europeans, meanwhile, did not even have a word for their own for city. The organization of the urban community life with all of its entails in terms of civilization did not originate with them. It didn't originate. Civilization didn't originate in Europe. It has been shown that all of their words for city, town, etc. are loan words. Samuel Kramer has recently published a volume resulting from a lifetime of cuneiform studies, which he titles From the Tables of Sumer, Tablets of Sumer. And his subtitle takes the following form, 25 first in man's recorded history. And we'll go on from there next week. We're going to study a little bit about the sciences. We're going to study a little bit about how mankind accumulated knowledge of the sciences from these different cultures. All right? You ready to go out and do something eternal? Did that get your thinker working tonight just a little bit? All right, we'll go back each week and we'll study a few verses back from the book of Genesis with a little Hebrew, but we're going to go back and we're going to study the origin of the races, the personalities of the nations, and the personalities of the genetic stems of mankind. All right. Christine, you want to dismiss